What's up, everyone? This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our episodes are available on all major podcast platforms. Just look or search for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast, as well as you can search for us on all various social media pages, such as Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All right, Rich. So, I guess a real quick question for you is, I know the game from Sunday, obviously our game against the Broncos was kind of an, if you were watching it at home, obviously I was there at the stadium, but if you're watching it at home, it was probably not a most interesting game or pretty boring game probably for the most part. But what did you feel about as far as last night's game? Because I thought that would be the more entertaining game of the week, especially how good New England is and Buffalo is. But with the weather and the wind going on there in Buffalo, I felt just watching that game was also kind of not as entertaining, or I could say as boring as well.
Yeah, so it reminded me of the Rams-Patriots Super Bowl from a few years ago, where Belichick just put the clamps on McVay and his offense, because without a doubt, not entertaining as a neutral. You want to see points scored. You want to see a lot of offense. You want to see the ball thrown around, but the weather hindered that, that factor from both teams. And it was just a really, really strategical display from Bill Belichick. So I thought it was boring without a doubt as a neutral to watch. But when you kind of dial back and understand football at deeper levels, something you can really admire. Let's say what Bill Belichick did, despite what Sean McDermott said today about not giving Belichick as much credit as everyone is giving him, right?
Right. And, you know, I know I see you kind of joked about it. Also, I put the image in the our chat this morning where it was like that one play from Madden where it's just like you just run up the middle every single play. But, I mean, it kind of was like that, really. If you obviously watch the game, Mac Jones only had one pass in the first half, and it's just like, wow, they're not passing the ball. But, you know, I guess, you know, give credit to Bill Belichick. He's been in those games before like that. He knows, the best for his team, how to course to win a game in that kind of conditions for that. So, obviously, you know, I think Jones ended up, was it three passes? I think it was three passes only.
I thought it was two.
No, I mean, I know he had, there was a drive in the fourth quarter where he threw back-to-back throws, at least I thought it was either two or three, but it kind of reminded me, obviously, with those less throws. I think the one game against the Broncos years ago when was Tebow, I think, beat us, and he only threw seven times in the game, I believe. As far as the weather conditions and everything last night in that game, it was kind of for as far as situational tactics. And like I said, Bill Belichick is the best at that. I thought it was interesting to just see him just constantly run the ball. And he was smart enough to know, or the player was smart enough to know whenever they did the coin toss at the beginning of the game to, hey, fourth quarter, make sure the wind is in our favor going into that quarter. So
yeah, and you're right. He threw three passes, completed two for 19 yards. But yeah, that's insane in modern day football. And that's why Belichick is the GOAT, right? He is the best by far and understanding situations and putting players in the best possible situation to be successful. So,
Correct. Yeah. So, like I said, they ultimately came away with the win last night, and they are still the number one seed in the AFC at the moment. So, getting to the Chiefs now, and the Chiefs and Broncos Week 13 game from Sunday night. I guess I'll send it to you for the box score from that game.
Alrighty, so high level, anytime you need technology to work, it likes to slow down on you. Alright, so final score of the game was Chiefs 22, Broncos 9. That puts the Broncos at 6-6 and the Chiefs at 8-4. Chiefs is still ahead in the division. Going into high level team numbers, I'll start off with the rushing numbers. The Broncos ran the ball 31 times for 154 yards, no touchdowns. Chiefs ran the ball 24 times for 89 yards and one touchdown. Passing-wise, Broncos were 22-40, 257, one touchdown. Oh, that's not a touchdown. Sorry. Yeah, that is a touchdown. And then two interceptions. And Chiefs were 15-29, 184, no touchdowns and one interception. Both teams had a sack, putting the total yardage count for both teams with the Broncos at 404, the Chiefs at 267. Broncos had three turnovers overall. The Chiefs had one. Time of possession, the Broncos were at 33-30. Chiefs were at 26-30. And as you would think, names-wise, from an individual category, Teddy Bridgewater, of course, those are all his passing numbers. Javonte Williams led the way for the Broncos, 23 carries, 102 yards. Jerry Jeudy and Javonte Williams were the leading receivers for the Broncos with 77 and 76 yards, respectively. Javonte Williams was the one with the touchdown. For the Chiefs, of course, those are Patrick Mahomes' number, right? 15 completions, 29 passes, 184 yards, and an interception. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 14 carries for 54 yards. And then in the receiving category, Darrell Williams led the way from a yardage perspective with 60 yards. And then him, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Travis Kelce all had three receptions. Can't forget about the defense. Tyrann Mathieu had seven tackles, followed by Charvarius Ward at five. The sacks were split between Gay and Melvin Ingram, right? They shared a sack. And then defensively for the Broncos, the rookie Baron Browning led the way with seven tackles, and a sack came from Jones on their defense. So, yeah, those are the team and a little bit of individual numbers.
So just quickly, and I know we talked about tackles, but I don't think it's ever really good whenever your top two tacklers are in your secondary. You always like to see, obviously, your linebackers or even maybe defensive line getting some tackles. But whenever your secondary is your top two tackles, it's not always good, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, the Broncos definitely got to run the ball a lot. And they kind of didn't have a choice, right? Terry Bridgewater wasn't very good. And it's one of those games where I think the strategy was let Williams beat you because, you know, Bridgewater can't. So, I agree on the thought process.
Right. So as far as on, any injuries from the game, there was only actually one. I'm not sure if there's any from the Broncos side, but as far as on the Chiefs side, it was special teamer Chris LeMans, I think that's how you pronounce his name, he had an ankle injury on the opening kickoff. I guess Andy Reid said he should be fine. He'll work his way back through it. Nothing as far as how serious or if it was just, minor sprain or whatnot on his ankle, but said he should be fine. Obviously, we didn't see Rashad Fenton play. We didn't see Lucas Niang play. But in those spots where they do play, I did thought, Mike Hughes had an impactful game, but he filled in Fenton's shoes pretty well for being her. I know Baker played some plays as well, and actually I think Baker had a really nice play. I think I can't remember exactly, but I do remember it was a sideline pass that he broke up that was almost close to being could have been a touchdown if it was caught, and he broke up that pass. So they did fill in nice for Fenton, and also Andrew Wiley, who I'll talk about here in a second or here in a couple minutes, whatever. He actually filled in pretty nicely for Lucas Niang on the right tackle spot. So we'll see if they come back this week against the Raiders. If not, this would be something to look forward to, or at least to keep an eye out for going forward. And then also Kyle Long, he was activated from the team, but he was inactive for the game. So he's probably still not game ready, I guess you would say, yet. So moving on to some of the high-level plays of the game. Obviously, if you were there like me, if you're at home like Rich, I was watching the game. Wasn't really too many high-level plays at this game. Like I said, it was kind of a sleeper, I guess you would say, right? As far as one of the high-level plays that I had seen was probably our first touchdown And in that first drive there, it was a 12-play, 72-yard drive, where Patrick Mahomes ends up scrambling for that 10-yard touchdown run to make it 7-0. And when I talked about Andrew Wiley, filled in pretty nicely. He actually pancaked one of the – I don't remember who it was on the Broncos' defensive line, but he pancaked one of the guys. It was so good. I had to, you know, rewind and watch that multiple times. But I thought that was a really good job as far as Mahomes being aware of, you know, he has the I guess you would say room or space to you know, make that run happen and get that touchdown.
You know, I know that Orlando Brown's pancake was pretty notable. I think it was in the third quarter. I'm like sitting here trying to remember the Andrew Wiley one, but I couldn't. But of course, let's say Mahomes' touchdown. You know, I think the announcers were talking about how it reminded them a little bit about the Tennessee Titans run in the AFC Championship game a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just the ability that Patrick has. So, yeah, I mean, it was good. It obviously he got in. I always worry because if I'm not mistaken, you know, trying to remember exactly what happened there at the end, it almost looks like a defender kind of pulls up or maybe slows down as he's kind of going into that end zone. I think I'm actually, you know what? I'm actually thinking of a play that where he almost went for a first down where he kind of tiptoes on the sideline.
Yes, I remember that play too. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those where that's the, you know, he's not Lamar Jackson fast, but he's fast enough to be mobile and make things happen there. So, I mean, it was just a good play. Thought it was going to be a, you know, one of many touchdowns, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah, the way that game was going at that point, especially on that first drive, you thought like, oh, there could be, you know, at least score, you know, mid-20s in this game, or, you know, could even be a 30-point score for this game, you know, going into that. But, you know, even our second drive where we got a field goal off of, you know, it was kind of, it was going that way. It was like, oh, we're 10-0, you know, we're in the second quarter, thinking like, oh, we might be scoring more points in this game. But it obviously, you know, as we all watched the game, it just kind of went downhill from there as far as our offense and just a really good, great performance once again by our defense, which leads me into the second high-level play I have, which pretty much is only all the one that I could think of because, like I said, it was just kind of one of those games that wasn't a lot of, I would say, just one plays that like dynamic plays in this game. It was kind of all just really good individual efforts and each other play that, you know, the defense did well. So speaking of the other high level play I had was obviously the famous tip pass by Ben Neiman. And it was in the hands of Daniel Sorensen. I know I had a pause there, but it's just cause you know, you don't really hear that much for those two guys anyways. But so you had those guys involved with that. Obviously, you said Neiman tipped the pass to Sorensen. He caught it, made, I believe, two different missed tackles on the Broncos, and, you know, had a little celebration before he got there in the end zone and scored that pick six, which it was good to see him, you know, have a little fun there at the end, getting the end zone. But what do you think about that play, Rich?
Yeah, it's funny because when it happened, I think we messaged in our group chat. It was like, of course, Ben Neiman tips it, and then Sorensen gets it.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, when a team is in rhythm and just doing well, you know, everybody, even your, let's say, lower on the depth chart players can make plays, you know. So it was good for those two for, you know, all the flack that not only I've given them, but everybody that watches the Chiefs game have given them. It was good for them to get a play. But, man, Daniel Sorensen's toe drag as he's headed to the end zone, that's too hard, man. There was nothing smooth about them toes dragging. He's kicking up way too much sand and grass and dirt. So I think Dan Sorensen needs to work on some touchdown celebrations.
That is true. It's very true.
I mean, there was way too much dragging of the toes. Like, I remember watching it like, man, you got to be smoother than that.
Right, that's true. But, yeah, I mean, it was good seeing that, you know, especially they were, you know, pretty excited for Sorensen to have another pick six on his resume. I think that might be his third, if I'm correct. I know he's had one against Oakland, but I want to say he had one another game, but I can't remember. But, yeah, it was good seeing, like I said, defense, you know, getting 6 points off that turnover and into the end zone right away for that. But outside of that, But that was really it. I mean, up to that point, obviously after that happened, it was 22-3. And, you know, the Broncos come down there at the end of the game. They get a touchdown that was obviously meaningless, you know, at that point. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things that I always see when, you know, play prevent defense there at the end of the game, which I absolutely hate. But it's just obviously the kind of try to slow it down as much as possible and not get over the top there at the end. But that obviously, that, like I said, the Broncos scored that touchdown there, I'd say a little bit late there in the fourth quarter. With 5 minutes to go, and the final score ended up being 22-9 after they missed two-point conversion there. So that was really it as far as high-level plays. Was there anything that you might add to that?
For me, I really liked, and just, again, right, being a fan of tactics, strategy, you know, the X's and O's, I really like Juan Thornhill's interception because, you know, Juan Thornhill is usually the free safety, which – most of the time means he's a deep safety now, obviously based on alignments and coverages, he might be the shallow safety, but it's normally Tyrann Mathieu that's a little bit lower. So they switched it up, and I wonder if that is truly what caused Eddie to, you know, make that throw, because they threw it right to him. So maybe as he saw Mathieu dropping and, you know, he didn't realize that Thornhill was, sorry, dropping back into coverage, he didn't realize that Thornhill was coming up in coverage because he threw it right to him. So that to me was probably the play that stood out to me on the defensive setup.
And remind me on that play, because obviously I'm there at the stadium, but when Teddy Bridgewater threw that pass, to me it looked like there was nobody in the area. Like he kind of just threw it right to Thornhill.
Yeah, so there was somebody, I think Charvarius Ward was covering the wide receiver that was over the top, mm-hmm. but it seemed like it was, and I'd have to go back and watch it, but I think it was a hook or a curl route, and the he was just expecting the wide receiver to come back more because he had all that space, and Thornhill was just right there. So I don't know. It could be that he just – I mean, you'd have to look at it from Teddy's perspective and see what he saw, but it just threw it right to him. So there was someone about, I don't know, 5 to 10 yards up the field. So, yeah, I could see how maybe it did look like nobody was in the area.
Yeah, from where I was sitting, and then kind of when I watched the replay, it just didn't really look like anybody was there. And I'm like, hey, just threw it straight to him. But that might make sense that the wideout on that play was just taken away, you know, as far as trying to get Teddy get him the ball in that play. So, but yeah, as far as that, I mean, the only other thing I would say is I know Harrison Butker, people don't really talk about field goals much because it's not something that you really want to talk about. But, you know, Butker had another three-game performance field goal, hit all three of them, and he hit a 56-yarder, which I believe it either ties or broke actually a record for most 50-yard field goals for the Chiefs in a season, but I can't remember about that. Unless I'm thinking of actually Butker's own personal best. It could be that too. But because I know he's hit quite a few 50-yarders this year. I think he's hit 5 this year, so... having a good kicker in this league, whether it's something that is not exciting to talk about, it's one of a good thing to have because, I don't know, I think we've talked about it maybe a little bit of, you know, here on our podcast, but a whole lot, but to have an actual decent kicker that doesn't, we did on our midseason review, to have a kicker to not miss often, especially extra points, and be pretty accurate for most part of his career is very rare nowadays, I would say, because, I mean, obviously you got to put him in at least the top 10 kickers right now in the league, if not top 5 is being accurate. So even though it's not a high-level plays or anything like that, I thought it was important to at least keep his name, you know, kind of in that mention of from part of this game because there was a lot of field goals in this game too.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's not the sexiest thing to have. But it's like insurance, right? You want to make sure that you can count on the guy to make his extra points and his field goals when you need him.
Correct, yep. So as far as our player of the game, which actually I like to call it now game ball, which I think we'll kind of just transition over to game ball. You know, I think to me it has to go, for me it's Daniel Sorensen making that play because not only he made that play, even though he is in the right place at the right time, he still returned to the house, made, like I said, a couple moves to, you know, get people from, you know, not tackling him before he gets to the end zone. And then also he made a really good play on that 2-point conversion at the end of the game to stop them from making 2 points to be only down two possessions, being 22-11. But instead, he didn't. Obviously, the Broncos failed that 2-point conversion, ending it at 22-9. But I, for my game ball, I think it's Daniel Sorensen.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, I'm going to go with a different safety on the team. And just because I really like him, and I think he's been a game changer, and it was good to see him get an interception. So I'm going to go with Juan Thornhill. I just really like, you know, that play where he got his interception and then his ability after the ball. I was expecting a little bit more, but it's just, like I said, anytime he gets into space, you know, or any defensive back gets into space, right, they look to take it to the house. And, but yeah, like I said, I think it was more of the strategical part of it. I mean, tackles wise, he had 4-6 total because he had 2 assisted. So yeah, that's who gets my game ball, is Juan Thornhill.
Yep, I can't argue with that too as well. I like Thornhill as well, and it's good to see him play at the performance that he had 2 years ago too, before he got hurt. And wasn't able to play in our Super Bowl win over the 49ers or even the playoffs for that year too as well. So it's good to see him stepping up and making some plays and doing pretty well. So I'm just going to start this over with you actually first. So as far as the player that disappointed you the most, who do you have for this game?
For me, it has to be, it's a toss up between Tyreek Hill or Byron Pringle, right? The constant lack of hands showed, if I'm not mistaken, Byron had 2. No, he had a heck of a catch on 1, but there were 2 that just literally bounced off of hands, arms, chest. And, cause he's also turning his head and looking to run. But the one with Tyreek Hill, I guess I'll probably say Tyreek Hill, just because, I mean, he is the number one wide receiver. He's constantly up there in discussion as one of the best. But Patrick Mahomes, that throw, maybe it wasn't perfect, right? It wasn't perfect. The one where he tips it, goes up, and then Patrick Surtain gets an interception. Patrick Surtain the second. Got to make sure to clarify that, because his dad was also an NFL player that people know.
For us too.
Yeah, and he also played for us too. So, and he was there at the game decked out in Broncos gear, which he should be, right? Because that's his son. So, but yeah, I would say Tyreek Hill, just because that's the one thing I've always criticized him on. And I understand that he makes his plays the way he makes his plays, and that's great. But yeah, I mean, your quarterback is kind of been doing better about his decision-making the last few games. And it seems like we're still not helping him out, though. You know, our playmakers aren't really helping him out. I'm one of those that if it hits your hands, which he still had full ability to, you know, get full hands on that ball, and it still bounces up and then obviously gets an interception. I mean, you can tell, if you go back and watch like the highlights of the game, there's one where Patrick gets mad at Tyreek Hill because I don't know if he ran the wrong route, stopped on the route or something like that. But they just don't seem to be, they weren't on the same page this past weekend. I shouldn't say more than just this weekend. So I would say Tyreek Hill for the player that I expected more from.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I'll touch base on Pringle real quick. Obviously, he would probably be like my number 2 as well. Obviously, he did drop, like I said, 2 balls, I believe, and made that other, catch. But the reason he didn't make up for that in a way. I mean, obviously, I talked about earlier about the injury report, how the cornerback Chris Lamons got hurt in the game. If he wasn't in the game, if he didn't get hurt, that, which actually we didn't get to talk about, that fumble for the punt, I'm trying to remember now, when that happened in the game, it was actually Pringle that actually got pushed into, Pringle pushed the other Broncos player to push into his own player that caused that fumble. So, I mean, I guess you could say, was it Pringle helped out there? Yeah, but I mean, who would have known what I guess would have happened if it wasn't Pringle there on the field? So in a way, I give Pringle a little bit of credit, I guess. He deserves something for that. But now back to Tyreek Hill. Obviously that's his 9th drop of the year. I believe if he's not tied, he's leading in the lead for most drops per player in the league. So and to see that being how great he is, it's kind of disturbing to see it, happen, quite a bit that it has been this year. And like I said, we've talked about his hands, for the last, 4 or 5 years or whatnot, about how he makes, you know, great catches, but then there's catches he should make that he doesn't make. But, you know, the fact that out of the 9 drops he's had this year, I believe like 4 of them have been deflected into interceptions. So it's just kind of continuing frustration to kind of see those plays happen. And just, you know, I hope you just, you know, get better at that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was probably the only player I kind of really could have really seen as far as being a disappointment. Because overall, I mean, besides the drops on offense, I couldn't really say anything bad about how the defense played because they played excellent the whole game. As far as now, I know we don't really have like the favorite moment of the game, and I think we've kind of already mentioned moments. So instead of moments, I would go with interesting things from the game that we didn't talk about. One I had that I was there obviously live seeing the game, and I noticed on the second drive the Broncos had, we started doing like a line shift. And I don't know if people are, you know, that are listening to this, they have watched hockey before or anything like that, but what the Chiefs were doing was in that second drive the Broncos had was the whole starting defensive line was on the sidelines for the first, I want to say, 5 or 6 plays. And then they came out. It was a little like a line change because then all 4 of those came out and the 4 starters came in. And it happened again. It's the first time I've ever noticed it. It happened again the next drive that the starting 4 were on the sidelines. And the backups were in for like the first 4 or 5 plays. So I'm like, are they on a snap count? Like it just seemed odd. Now, of course, throughout the rest of the game, it was kind of like, okay, they were changing out 1s and 2s like you normally see. I just thought that was kind of odd. I didn't know if you noticed that at home.
I did not.
Yeah, so I thought that was it was something I hadn't seen before, and I thought that was something to bring up that you know, like I said. Like hockey, they do it like where it's like literally they have like 5 guys on the ice, and then all of a sudden they'll change out the whole line. So I thought it was kind of very interesting, but I would say to an extent it kind of maybe worked. But I see that when they first did it, which when the Broncos got that I think that was a big play out on the 1st or 2nd down, they end up getting a field goal off that drive, which so I was like, oh, this is kind of weird, but. anyway, so I do have 2 other ones we didn't talk about as well. One was the Travis Kelce catch and fumble that obviously the refs end up saying that it was incomplete. Now, they're also there at the stadium. To me, it looked like it was just incomplete. I mean, but I've heard it could have went either way. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that play?
Yeah, I remember obviously watching it in real time, and I think I was like, why wasn't it a fumble? I'm trying to remember. Obviously, that was only 2 days ago, but
mm-hmm.
And I have to go back to watch it really quick. But
because what happened was
like a fumble.
Because he caught it, but like I felt like by the time he had a second step down is when the ball came out, but it just didn't look like he had possession at all or made a football move. To consider it, but like I guess from what I was hearing, it was a lot closer than what people think too.
Yeah, I'm gonna see if in the meantime while we're chatting it up, if I can pull it up. But yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was one where I was like, "Dang, that should have been a fumble."
Right. Yeah. I had a third interesting fact that I can't remember what I was gonna talk about on the third one. But no, I mean, as far as on overall in the game, like I said, the defense played once again excellent. If I'm not mistaken, I had a stat here earlier, which I guess you can share. Since week 8, the Chiefs defense has been 2nd in the NFL on points per game allowed, which is 11.2 points per game. They are 1st in the NFL. On third down percentages, which is 25%, and they are 2nd in the NFL on red zone touchdown percent at 36%. So just seeing that and just obviously watching the games, and they've been on the 5-game tear, you know, winning streak, the defense obviously deserves pretty much, I wouldn't say all the credit, but majority of the credit for the wins. It'd be nice to see the offense, you know, when is that? We saw, obviously, that Raiders game where we won 41-14, and we've said that's the complete game we're looking for of the season. Well, we haven't seen that since from both sides. So it'd be interesting. Obviously, we're playing the Raiders again this week, this time at home. If maybe that offense could come around again and, you know, maybe Mahomes can get that 4 or 5 touchdown game like he had against the Raiders about 3 or 4 weeks back. So,
yeah, I mean, that's definitely a team to get put big numbers up on, right? I mean, I think the Cowboys game or the last game was in the 30s. So,
right.
I don't see them getting any better.
Right. Were you able to look up that Kelce thing at all?
No, try to YouTube it, and you'd have to go through the entire game to find that exact one.
Right, yeah. Yeah, not I said that sometimes it does happen where it's, you have to fast forward to get to that one spot. So
yeah, and I'm like, I can't remember the exact time frame. Do you remember the time frame on it?
I don't. I wish I did, but that's no worries for that. But, you know, so – just a little bit going forward, obviously, you know, we're still in that fourth seed at 8-4, you know, a couple teams ahead of us with the Patriots at 9-4, who won last night, Tennessee at 8-4, and the Ravens at 8-4. And like I said, a whole bunch of teams in the AFC have either 6 or 5 losses below that. You know, looking ahead as far as our schedule compared to their schedule, if I'm not correct, I remember hearing at least that we could be the favorites to get the number one seed. Obviously, there's a lot of things that could happen between now and then. Who knows, you know, what happens. It's just, obviously, that's a speculation for anything at the moment. But, you know, the Chiefs still got to take care of business and win the last 5 games of the year to get, you know, hopefully a reasonable chance to get that number one seed.
Yeah, I mean, and we've got division games, right, that are always tricky, as well as some AFC North games. But, yeah, I mean, I guess you can say our destiny or our seeding is 100% in our hands. We shouldn't have to rely on anyone else, let's say, for any favorable results, right, if we take care of business. And, I mean, kind of as we talked about in that mid-season episode, mm-hmm. the Chargers, maybe the Bengals, you know, really the only games that you kind of have question marks on, of course, the Raiders game. You know, it's a divisional game, right? So anything can happen there. But yeah, I mean, the good thing is, like I said, we just worry about ourselves. They go up against the Patriots, go up against the Colts, the Bills, the Jags, and the Dolphins. So 2 out of those 4 games are, I mean, they're like really tough, and then the other 2 are not so tough. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like we'll definitely have a good chance of recovering the one seed, which is something that nobody thought we would get, 10 weeks ago?
That
long ago.
Well, it seemed like that, right? I mean, that was kind of when we were juggling that 500 record back then. But I think I remember hearing, too, last night that this is the first time, at least in the AFC, since mid 80s, where all the team, or maybe mid 90s, I couldn't remember exactly what time frame, where all the teams have at least 4 losses at this point in the season. Normally, there's always a team that might have, you know, 1, 2, or maybe even 3. So, for at least to have, you know, everyone has at least 4 losses in the AFC, that means it's a pretty close battle in the battling at all year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at, yeah, I mean, I thought I was going to break it down for me by playoff picture, but no, it just gave me the divisions. But yeah, I mean, heck, someone like the Colts could even come back, win their division, and end up in a one seed, you know, with how things go. The entire AFC North is technically wide open, to the point where you've got, you know, the Ravens at 8-4, the Browns at 6-6. So it's good, though, man. That's like the thing I like about, let's say, the NFL, there's a ton of parity. It technically isn't always the same teams in the playoff picture, or in the playoffs. I mean, you've got a few, right, that are always there, like the Chiefs as of recent. The Ravens usually have been there. You got the Packers, the Bucks now with Brady, or let's just say whatever team Brady's on.
Right.
But for the most part, you know, you've got some changing of the guard, and that's good. So it's going to be a great last few weeks of the season for, you know, the actual NFL teams, and then even fantasy owners, right? Now that the league has expanded by a game. I think most leagues are in their final week of the season, and then playoffs start for everybody. So
I'm actually kind of glad you brought that up just now, because that was kind of how I was wanting to end today. Was what are your thoughts on? Obviously, I think everyone's going to say yes to this, but as far as that added extra game that every team has this year, I think it's great, obviously. But do you think the NFL is going to probably push for 18 games like they want to and only have two preseason games? Because, you know, they'll probably see how adding that extra game just increases the revenue, obviously, for regular season games. But do you think they'll add that extra one just to make it eight?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think it'll eventually get there just because of what you said, right? Increased revenue. The preseason games, they're great for guys that aren't, you know, that are on the roster bubble, but those guys train every day, right? They're coaches are making decisions because of what they did in the game for the most part. Right now, you could be amazing in practice and terrible, you know, in the games for some reason, and then you get cut or put on practice squad. But for the most part, they use training camp and a preseason game or two to figure things out. The players don't even like playing in preseason because, one, it's hot as heck. Two, you know, why risk it for something that technically doesn't count for the stars? And like you said, you know, they make a lot more money and they can increase not only salaries, but obviously salary caps, revenue brought in. The one thing though I will say is, man, I love watching football and as much as I can NFL football. But if the NFL would look at maybe getting rid of the Thursday games, let college football have that back again. And, you know, add that 18th game, so there's 19 weeks in the season. I think the players would probably vote for that too, because those Thursday games are brutal, not only for the viewers, because most of them are pretty bad, but for the players, right, where they sometimes have, that short week to prepare for if they just played this. Well, I mean, obviously, they just played the Sunday before, and then they've got really 4 days to prepare for. So it'll be interesting to see how those negotiations go whenever they happen.
So I know you said Thursday night, and obviously everyone agrees with Thursday night. What would you think if they instead did away with Thursday, but maybe they did Tuesday?
Oh, I think it'd be even worse.
because they had obviously Tuesday games last year, all the COVID games and moves, and I don't think there was really any bad games on the Tuesdays that I remember. But, I don't know.
I think just from a preparation perspective, so let's say you technically get one extra day to prepare for that Tuesday game if you played the previous Sunday. Well, two Sundays before.
Right.
But then you only get, 5 days to prepare for the next game? It's almost like you're losing it no matter what. You know, you're losing. You might be gaining, but then you're losing. I don't think the NFL cares about who else they're sharing stuff with. But, yeah, there's nothing on Tuesdays until the NBA and baseball. Well, until baseball is over with the World Series in September and October. Well, the playoffs in September, October, all that fancy stuff.
Right.
But then with basketball, I don't think NBA basketball is really that heavy in, you know, the final months of the NFL season. So,
right.
Yeah. I even thought about Friday nights, man, but people, they go watch high school football. That's like high school football night.
And I know they do Saturdays or, you know, late in December, but that's because college football is over with, so that makes sense. I mean, I'm totally for still keeping that, but I agree with the try to get rid of the Thursdays. But like you said, it's the NFL. It's all about revenue and extra air time. So that's why they'll probably still keep it. But it is what it is on that. So
now let me hit you with a quick, on the spot question.
Yep.
What do you think about the NFL adding, let's say, two more franchises, making it 34 NFL teams within the next 5 years?
To me, it'd be kind of interesting. I don't see it happening, but obviously wouldn't put it past them to think about that. I just, for some reason, it's been 32 teams for quite some time. I feel like it's just the, what do you call it? Because all the sports seem to add up to 32 or right around 32. Maybe it might be 30 or 31. I think even MLS is going to try to eventually get to 32. I don't know. I just don't see 34 teams. I really don't, to be honest.
Yeah, so I think it's one of those where you got to look at the big, big markets and see who is ready for something like that, right? So I've thought about another team in Chicago. But man, because you know they have the Sox and the Cubs in their split. Which if you go to Chicago, right, it's really split. Like there's the South side and there's the North side of Chicago. So I thought about maybe that'd be one place, but economically, I don't know if there's anything in Chicago that they could handle something like that. You know, I think they have the infrastructure, but financially, you know, with a city that struggles with so many other things, would they be willing to do that? Then you start looking at some of the Texas places, like San Antonio and Austin. Austin is smaller than your typical big city, but, you know, anything in Texas usually does well, right? And then, of course, you know, what happens if Oakland or like San Francisco got another team? You know, I've always said it's kind of funny that there isn't one in Portland, but there really isn't much up there in that Northwest area. So, you know, people have said St. Louis would be in it again since they were bummed that the Rams left when the Cronkies bought them. But who knows? I think it would be good because I think it's always cool, you know, to see new teams in the NFL. From a player pool perspective, you know, because you don't want to maximize something so much that your product diminishes in quality. I think there's still plenty of players, you know, to go around to where 34 teams would have an adequate amount of, let's say, decent players to where you're still fielding competitive teams, right? You're always going to have your bottom, your middle, and your top. So yeah, that's always an interesting concept. But who knows, right? I mean, I think to your point, we're probably a little too far away from that, and who knows? Because I mean, the NBA is at what, 30?
Yeah, it's about. I think it's about 30. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have no idea.
And they're trying to get two more teams eventually. Like I said, Seattle's going to be an ultimate one there, and I think they said the last was between Vegas and Kansas City as the 32nd team. But we'll have to see how that happens.
And like, kind of the NFL makes me think about with them adding that extra playoff spot. It's like, are they slowly working towards that, right? Because before it was six, now it's seven.
Mm-hmm.
So is it that you're going to, you know, I mean, is it that long term? You're looking at eight playoff spots with, you know, 17 teams in both conferences to you know, what they currently do now with 7 and 16. So,
yep. I know you said you touched about expansion, but here's one of the reasons why I'd say no, at least right now. You have teams like the Chargers who don't even have a lot of fans there in LA for their games. They're not filling up that stadium with their own fans. So LA's had problems with their fan base from years. I mean, obviously there probably is a lot more Rams fans there than there is Chargers, but you also got teams like Atlanta that they fill up their stadium more for their MLS team than they do their football team, which that's what their stadium is for. So there's things like that that is why I don't see it happening, at least right now. I mean, like I said, who knows 5-10 years in the future. Like I said, especially with NFL, you know, being up there as far as the number one sport in America, because, you know, with baseball, yeah, it was coming back, but now, you know, they're looking at a lockout again or a strike, whatever, if that happens. But, you know, it's just – I just don't see it. I mean, just because there's just some of these teams and stadiums still don't have that fan base for their area.
Yeah, can definitely see that.
So, but no, very good topics that we ended this episode with, you know, especially on the extra teams and extra games. You know, very interesting to see how this league moves forward, going forward in the future.
For sure.
On that. So with that, that is all the time that we do have here for today's episode. Just check back with us later in the week. This is Raiders week for our week 14 Chiefs-Raiders matchup here in Kansas City at Arrowhead. So thanks again, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to follow our podcast and go Chiefs.